On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Teresa Creech, CEO of TalentWave, an organization that helps companies and independent workers engage with each other safely and easily. Teresa and Leslie spend much of their conversation on the topics of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the staffing industry, and how they hope to make an impact on gender equity as members of a newly formed Staffing Leadership Council in partnership with the Women Business Collaborative. We also get a front seat to Teresa's own career story, including how she rose to the top as a female executive, learning to balance fear and risk throughout her different roles. Whether it was when she first cut her teeth in startups or she climbed the ladder at some of the industry's best-known organizations, Teresa shares her leadership takeaways and why it's so important to differentiate fact and fiction in decision-making. Teresa also talks about the immense value of mentorship, how she managed the demands of being a working parent, and the advice she gives her now college-age children. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, and I am the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and it is my pleasure to welcome Teresa Creech to the Edge podcast, currently CEO for TalentWave, where you've spent the past 5 years. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, Leslie.
You became the CEO of TalentWave after a strategic merger of two companies, Icon Professional Services and Synergy Services. Teresa, for those not familiar with TalentWave, tell us about the company.
Sure, I'm happy to. So at our core, TalentWave helps companies and independent workers engage with one another safely and easily. Most commonly, this includes worker classification, IC compliance, professional payroll, but our services also include the management of small vendors, small suppliers, and private talent communities, and direct sourcing engagements. So basically, we remove the risk and absorb the administrative burden of making sure companies can work with all kinds of 1099s and small companies along with W-2 workers.
Thank you for the background. And Teresa, I know you have spent the bulk of your career in staffing, HCM technology, global MSP, VMS, and IC compliance, really holding executive roles with some of the most recognized brands in our industry. You've been with Randstad, Kelly, and Manpower. What roles do you believe career path-wise really set you best up for success as a CEO?
So it's an interesting question, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a different answer than you're probably expecting. Prior to the big companies that I worked with, I actually worked on two small startups, both tech companies, both in the staffing industry, but as part of the founding team members that launched those companies. And when you're in those kinds of environments, meaning a startup environment, if you've ever done it, you probably have, you know what it's like. You roll up your sleeves, you get work done, you wear seven hats, there's no department to call to get your needs met. You have to be in the weeds of your business forward and backward. But more importantly than that, that leads to a lot of depth on the company itself and gives you a perspective of kinds of functions in a company that you really enjoy, equally a perspective on some of those that you might not enjoy. But the thing that I really learned in those startup environments was how important it was to build the foundational elements like culture. And in that kind of startup arena, you realize every decision you make impacts the tone you set for your people, the market view of your company, and how you're going to inspire growth. So it does teach you just how important those elements are. In a practical sense, though, I would say, and I do see them as sort of two different things, on the really practical side, my last role prior to TalentWave was as a group president for Randstad. This is where I really was, I would say, encourage strongly to adapt the ability to build the appropriate metrics to run a company, instill the appropriate levels of accountability, and spread that out appropriately to focus on performance and be very laser focused on performance without performance being a bad word. And all of this was extremely, extremely helpful to getting to where I am now. But that said, I am a first time CEO. I've been a CEO for 5 years. TalentWave is a private equity backed company, which comes with a whole different set of learning. So without being too tongue-in-cheek, the role that helped me most in this role is this role. I have been learning on a daily basis for all practical purposes throughout my tenure here and continue to learn more and more every day. The private equity world is a little different than the large companies I had worked at, certainly than the large publicly traded companies, and different still from the founder-led startups that I had been a part of. So lots of variety there. Been an interesting journey, but I think as long as you're open to continually developing and soaking in what you can along the way, you'll continue to grow.
I love that. I learned something new about you today, just with your diverse background and working on the startup side, and certainly for companies like the size of Randstad and Kelly and Manpower, and then coming into your own as a CEO. What I love about it, Teresa, is you've really been able to kind of carve and create your own version of who you are as a CEO. And I can tell, just having worked with you, just the strength that you bring to the role. And it helps to hear how that story kind of came full circle for you. So with that, today, Teresa, I really consider, because you and I have been partnering closely on a special project, our podcast, a little bit of a special edition of sorts. So really shining a light on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts within the staffing industry. You and I are both part of a newly formed Staffing Leadership Council as part of the Women Business Collaborative. Staffing industry analysts, TechServe, and the American Staffing Association, as well as your co-chairs, Dana Lucarimoto and Kip Wright, and even more industry executives, everyone, they've come together in truly an unprecedented way for our industry in a much needed way. So I'm curious, because you were one of the three people kind of leading this charge at the outset, tell us how you got involved and what you hope to accomplish.
Sure. And thank you again. I'm so happy that you're part of it with us. I would say the best way to put it is I was drafted. I was thankfully drafted by Dana and Kip. We have known each other many, many years. I consider them both colleagues and friends. And we had, like many others in the staffing industry, this ongoing discussion on this topic. And the discussion was something like, how do we have this industry, the staffing industry, that is actually fairly well balanced in terms of total numbers of men and women. However, we are so imbalanced for senior level roles for women. So if you look at women and let's call it senior VP or above chairs inside the staffing industry, very underrepresented against the better balanced number that exists across the industry. So that dialogue's been happening in one way, shape, or form at every conference for many, many years. And our hope was, if we could come together, get the right group of people together, that we could take that from a conversation place and catalyze it into some action. So ultimately, we kind of looked at this thing in three goals, and I'll go a little bit into them. The first one is really education. So while we talk about these things in generalities and anecdotes, at the end of the day, what we really need is a set of data and a set of benchmarks that will help us establish metrics for improvement. The second bucket is really what we're calling elevate. And elevate refers to driving broad awareness across the industries. So as I mentioned, there have been pockets of this discussion for many years, but not necessarily awareness in a broad sense. That leads to the third, which is activate or activation, which is where we hope to create very real, pragmatic opportunities for measurable improvement. So it goes beyond talking, setting benchmarks, and rallying around this intellectually and making a pragmatic push forward. So that's really how we got started and what we hope to do in a nutshell.
Excellent. Well, I'm super proud to be a part of it and do believe that it's time to take action now. Obviously, you and I both have been very active in the industry and working on D&I initiatives, but the coming together of all of the groups seem to be really unprecedented, and I just love it. So it's great. And that said, people keep asking, what's the best way for others to get involved? So maybe you can share. And again, that's with the Staffing Leadership Council, which is part of the Women Business Collaborative, which I don't believe a lot of people have heard of. I know myself, Teresa, I've been attending a lot of the WBC events and have been extraordinarily impressed by the caliber of speakers that they're bringing to these events and the content coming out of it and just the way that they're trying to include everyone with, you know, wonderfully empowering messages. So tell us a little bit about how others can get involved.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm glad you gave a little more explanation there on the Women's Business Collaborative. There are 9 pillars that the group works on. Staffing is one of them, but they're doing phenomenal work. And part of the reason I think we're actually able to take that, again, from sort of intellectual conversation to something a little more real right now is that people found the WBC and the WBC gave us a framework for which to launch some of these initiatives. And absent that, I think we would have been much slower. We actually got started on this initiative pre-COVID. So we were making some progress on the overall launching pad back in the January and February timeframe. And then, of course, mid-March hit and everything went a little bit on hiatus for most of us because we were in chairs trying to shore up our own companies and our own teams and make sure that we were doing the best we could to weather this really, really strange time. So we have now picked it back up. As Leslie mentioned, we just conducted a survey that has just recently closed. The survey is sitting in the hands of the really smart data scientists that are going to help us crunch the numbers and, again, hopefully establish some benchmarks that will be our guideposts. Once we get those benchmarks established, the intent is that the data will show us not only where we need the most change and improvement, but also give us a little bit of a map to prioritize what those initiatives look like. And at that point, we'll be launching them through the help of lots of partners that are attached to this, including some of the leading analyst groups in the industry that are attached to this, as well as associations. And we'll be launching those initiatives that way. So we're a little premature for me to say this is exactly what you can do, but in the meantime, we can provide a link to the group, a link to the WBC, so you can start to understand what our charter looks like, where we're headed. And then obviously when we publish results, I can't take an exact date on that one either, only that it's within weeks, not within months. We'll have better direction on how to quickly throw your hat, heart, heads, hands into the ring and help us.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. Well, excellent. I look forward to launching the survey results and getting more people engaged. And obviously, we'll share more details as they become available. All right, Teresa, let's take a look back at your career as it relates to being a successful woman in the workforce. What stands out to you as something you wish would have been different, perhaps, as you rose through the ranks that we can take forward to help the next generation of female executives?
There's a number of things, as there are for anyone answering that question, but the one I'm going to focus on is one that I still see as a challenge. And so I think it warrants attention at minimum. And that is just a lack or at least an underdeveloped career pathing function inside most companies. And by that, I mean, if you're not in a career that is very specific, like a career, for example, in some healthcare functions or in some educational functions, if you're in a career, and especially for those of you that are members of our dear staffing industry, it isn't something where you went to school, you followed a certain set of classes, got out of school, and knew exactly how you were going to navigate this very obvious path in the staffing industry. There's not a staffing degree. So most of us landed here a bit accidentally. And then when we got here, speaking for myself, I was highly passionate about the space, felt like it was home right away, but there was no obvious, what do I do next? Now, I happened to cut my teeth on selling, so I came out of sales. Sales is still my first love. And so it was as simple as keep selling, sell more, hit your numbers out of the park, and eventually you'll lead that team. And that's the end, right? That's the end. So the leap between what does that mean and how do you get ready to take a senior leadership chair was really murky at best. And I think it was missing one, really strong feedback channels, very direct feedback channels, and opportunities for stronger coaching and development platforms. I mean, ironically, when we get to senior leadership positions, often our companies or we personally invest in formal professional coaches and things like that. But along the way, sometimes when you need it most, you don't have those tools at your disposal. So for me, that's the thing I think, one, I wish were changed. And two, I think we as leaders in companies have the ability to affect change pretty quickly.
I like that. The career pathing piece and focus is definitely something we need to take a look at, and looking at the succession plan and helping women see, are they in a succession seat and how to go about that as well. And part of that is, I mean, you mentioned with training and just career pathing and having strong role models and mentors to really be your own personal champion. So obviously, first and foremost, you need to be your own career champion and take control of it from that regard. But it also is quite helpful to have people who are surrounding you who also want to help you grow in your career. So did you always surround yourself with strong role models and mentors? Maybe you can share a little bit, because people often talk about how it's hard to find, or how do you go about asking someone? What did you do throughout your career and even today to make sure you were surrounded by really strong leaders?
So mostly yes is my answer. Of course, we all land in a spot or a role for a temporary period of time where you might feel like you're lacking some of that. But for the most part, I always have had strong mentors, still do. I've also had professional coaches, love them as well. But the mentoring piece is something all of us can do and find access to. And often the hardest piece is realizing that you might have to ask someone to play that role. So now in Talent Wave, I actually on a regular basis am always rotating through folks that I am mentoring. So I have two or three people at any given time, and they rotate through on 6-month cycles. But prior to having a program, you know, so structured and a real obvious way to follow that, often folks need to be willing to ask for the help, ask for that mentor relationship. And that can be really hard to do. A couple years ago, I spoke at an SIA event. I believe it was an exec forum event, and it was about women in leadership. And one of the questions was around women needing this sort of bolstering. And there was a stat, which I didn't have, but the person on the panel next to me had, and I've never forgotten the gist of it, although the numbers are unclear. But the gist of it was, when there's a position that is open, often men, more often than not, even if they only have on paper 50% of the requirements for that position, they'll leap to throw their hat in the ring for that position. Women, on the other hand, typically, now remember, these are just generalities, but typically need better than 90% of the list of items on paper before they're going to throw their name into that discussion. So sometimes mentors and champions can be at the foundation, just that which gives you a boost, that which just says you should go have this conversation, be open about your areas for growth and development, but really hit on all of the skills that make you the right match in basic terms. And sometimes you need that in mentors. I have always had that piece in mentors, and that helps a ton. These days, I have mentors in all kinds of different forms. One form, which probably is one that I maybe interact with the most, is our board of directors for Talent Wave includes two outside directors, independent directors, both women who have had unbelievably successful careers, who balance family and careers and private equity and all kinds of things that make their jobs in the world very difficult. And they act as mentors, not just for the strategy of Talent Wave, but as my sounding board. So yes is the very long-winded answer I gave you, but they come in all different shapes and sizes.
I love that you lean on your board as well and have female advisors on there. I feel like we all at all points always need a solid mentor and fan surrounding us. With that, speaking of solid fans and friends, our mutual good friend, Dana Look Aramoto, called you fearless and inspirational. I got that off of a quote she said about you. And did you always see yourself as your biggest fan, filled with confidence and a vision of one day becoming a CEO, or did it play out a little bit differently over the years?
Well, I'm really grateful for Dana's kind words. The truth teller in me would say I'm not entirely fearless. I do think, though, you learn to balance fear and risk much better the more times you've been faced with challenges, the more times you've skinned your knees. You can't be an effective leader if you don't accept the fact that you are going to face setbacks, and how you steer the ship through the hardest of times is really the most critical measurement of your leadership capacity and skill. And that's a really hard lesson to learn. Maybe it isn't a hard lesson for everyone to learn. It was a hard lesson for me to learn. I am a confident person. I've generally been a confident person. I tell this story frequently. When I was a little girl, my dad was a traveling salesman, so I had the sales gene, I guess, in me. He would bring us home all kinds of little souvenirs from his trips on the road. And when I was about six or so, he brought me home a pink wooden plaque, and it said, "Girls can do anything." And I had it hanging over my bed from the time I was six until I graduated from college. So I did have foundationally the belief that I could do what I put my mind to. I did also foundationally believe that I was not at a disadvantage as a female, that I would face challenges, but I wasn't afraid to face them. And I wasn't unrealistic about the fact that they were there. And sometimes it was going to require frustrating workarounds and things we shouldn't have to do to get there. But I didn't feel victimized by that. So I had that by way of confidence. But the counterbalance to that, Leslie, was I also was and still am to some extent, but hopefully recovering quite well, the kind of person that comes down really hard on myself. So I went through a period where I was coming up the ranks as a leader, and I really thought every time I took a little tumble that it was, you know, some form of failure. And it took, you know, coaches and mentors and others and your own sort of self-talk to realize that those are the opportunities for you to grow the most. Now that, you know, I've been in these chairs that have a fairly broad scope of responsibility, and that means by definition faced with lots more challenges and lots more opportunities for those stumbles, you learn to not take them so hard, and you learn to take them in stride, and you learn to grow from them. And that self-blame piece that does hold you back starts to go away. And I won't say it all the way goes away, but certainly goes away to the extent that you don't lose productivity, you don't lose confidence, you don't get set back yourself by those things.
So I would say a lot of what you've just mentioned remind me of a book that I just read recently called How Women Rise. Actually, Teresa Carroll had shared it with me, and we've hosted book clubs on it now internally at Clear Edge and externally. And I know ASA has hosted events on it as well. And there's something that I still struggle with that I have to constantly work on, which is ruminating. And it's not even just being fearless. It's just letting go, like trusting yourself and being kind to yourself and forgiving of yourself if you do anything, but you're doing the best that you can. And those kind of waking up at 3, 4, or 5 in the morning, like, oh gosh, what did I just do? Or overthinking and all of these things. I'm hopeful at some point that goes away and changes, but it's something I know I continue to work on as well. But it's so important just to know everyone is going through something in their own right. And even the most confident people you look at externally, internally, there's certainly things that we're all constantly working on just to better ourselves and those around us, and just learn and develop into our leadership style, which, like you said, it's something that you continue to work on and continue to grow as far as finding your voice. So thank you for sharing that. So speaking of fearless, you became the CEO of two merged companies that were essentially competitors. And on top of it, you had two different headquarters, one in California and one in Colorado. What is it about your leadership style that made bringing the two companies together work?
Well, there was a couple things going on in the background that helped, that are separate from my leadership style, but I would be remiss not to mention them. It did help that I was a new CEO to those companies. I was not ingrained in the strategies they had built. I did not build those leader teams myself. It wasn't my baby. So I was coming in with fresh eyes. I took over the CEO chair in February and we acquired Synergy 5 months later. So it was a very, very quick merger of those two, and both were about the same size. So it was a very quick decision and we moved with lightning speed. But the other thing that was going for me in my favor was we had supporting founders for both organizations that were exiting, retiring, and they were extremely supportive of me. They were extremely supportive of the vision for putting these two companies together. So they helped launch me, if you will, on the path to bringing the two groups together. But you know, when I think about the leadership qualities that it took, there's a couple things that come to mind. And I've lived through a fair bit of M&A, but this was the first time I had been in that chair. I've been in the CEO chair for that exercise. And I think a willingness to be really open-minded is so important. And that means taking a breath, taking a beat. I don't mean going slow, but I do mean being deliberate about learning and listening and understanding what that merged entity needs to look like by learning how to protect the legacy, but embrace the future. And that's always a bit of a balance. Second one is really having a emphatical commitment to alignment in the leader team, regardless of what that means, but getting a senior team to guide and navigate a company through an acquisition and a merger is complicated at best. If there's dissension in the ranks, disagreement about where we're going, misalignment about the culture we want to build, all of those things, it's a recipe for disaster. So whatever we had to do to make that happen, I personally brought in some help to work with the leader team to make sure that we could achieve that necessary alignment. And then the last thing, which this is something I'm constantly learning as a leader, is speed is important. And I don't mean reckless speed. I don't mean speed for speed's sake. But often as leaders, and I think this draws back to your point on ruminating, often as leaders, we know what the right decision or the right course of action is. But the right course of action might be tough. It might not be popular. Any of those things, there's a million reasons why we don't move more quickly than we should. I'm a firm believer that if you know it is right, then moving with speed and deliberateness is a huge help. And that's never more true than in an integration project. I've read a ton of these. You probably have too. Stories about companies that take years and years and years to put their infrastructures together, to build a cohesive team, to unite the culture, to re-solidify or build a new brand. The longer that journey is, the absolute more painful and murky it becomes, is my belief. Now, there's all kinds of reasons to be careful as well. I'm not at all endorsing carelessness, but speed and deliberateness and decisiveness is really important during integrations.
Excellent. Well, speaking of things that are important after you integrated the companies and you've brought everyone together and have things kind of humming along, you're also constantly, as the CEO, keeping an eye on what's around the corner. So while you need to focus on integration and getting the company, you know, running to where it was, and you've done that for the past 5 years, what is next? If you kind of look at your segment of the industry, and I guess this question is really timely coming off of CWS this week, where you're probably getting a lot of interesting information and meeting with clients and prospects and so forth. But what's next for your segment of the industry? There seem to be kind of new companies come to market. So how do you continue to keep an eye on what's next and then maintain your competitive edge?
So there's a couple things that we are watching and taking action on. The first is, well, let's just talk about, there's a little bit of a perfect storm that works well for just our core services. And that perfect storm looks like lots and lots of new legislation. So you probably know this is the most active legislative year in 25 years for worker classification, in 25 years. And things like AB 5 out of California are leading the way, and that's creating murkiness and confusion. And then you've got things like the Uber and Lyft conundrum. The murkier that gets, that really makes the business case for compliance companies like ours to be able to drive more and more value for our customers. So some of what we have our eye on is our core stuff, where we've got external influences that are driving up the need for Talent Wave. The other thing that's happening is the gig workforce is growing. It was exploding pre-COVID. Now at COVID and virtual remote work and the extension of all kinds of creative engagements, the gig work is growing. And that is right where we live in the independent contractor space. So that's adding winds from another direction, but are still serving up to the storm that we're part of. And then you've got the emergence, and I would say it's turned up so high in the last, let's call it 2 to 3 years, of technology in the overall talent space. And so I mean on-demand talent, cloud providers, all kinds of platforms that essentially bring worker and work more closely together. And as that's happening, we're seeing lots of shifts. So MSP is evolving, the way staffing companies are interacting is evolving, the growth of independent contractors is exploding. So you've got these little things happening all over the place. For Talent Wave, what I love about our company is I see us as a glue factor, if you will, in this expanding ecosystem. For everyone that's doing all of these things, if you're a talent cloud provider, for example, there's still a need to have worker classification and often a need to have engagement. So talent cloud providers become both a customer and a partner. And so as I think about the ever-changing landscape we have right now, our job is to become the easiest, best, strongest partner to all of this new and innovative tech and modeling that's happening. It's a great time to be in the space we're in.
I would agree. Perfect time to be where we are. And I can't believe to mention just how many changes have been made just from a regulation standpoint and having to stay up on top of that. And really, that's the focus and crux of your business. It's really critical. So, and I know having worked with you that you all are always on top of your game and really represent such a great company. So congratulations on your success as well. Teresa, you have two adult children, a son and a daughter, and I see a lot of moms struggling to be both an executive and a mom, turning one off while doing the other or attempting to do both at the same time and just feeling like you're constantly letting someone down, including yourself, taking care of yourself, making your well-being a priority. It often takes a backseat. So kind of shifting back to the topic of executive women in our industry, as you look at yourself as you rose to the ranks of CEO while helping raise your kids, what would you say were some of your struggles over the years?
So let me start with, in 23 years, last 23 years, I have never lived and worked in the same city. So you can do the math there. It means lots and lots and lots of time away from home on planes and different time zones around the world. And that's a challenge in and of itself. Just the physicality of balancing those things is a challenge. And so probably the most basic thing that got in the way was that, and figuring out how to make that work. And so that's a dance you have to learn to do with your kids, with your partner. The divide and conquer piece becomes extremely important. You have to learn to accept that you can't do everything despite how much you try to do it. And the more you try to do everything, the more everything is halfway done. So all of those realities have to become part of your thinking and part of the way you're going to manage your life. I'm lucky enough to have a very strong partner, and we worked out a very nice balance of how we would do things, but there were still weird things. I'll never forget, we had a night where math homework happened to be one of the things assigned to me. So I ended up spending a middle of the night session trying to help my daughter through her math homework while I was in China. And for those of you that have tried to help your kids through math homework, new math is not the math we were taught. And so it's hard enough on its own, let alone in the middle of the night in China. But you learn how to make those sort of balances work when you need to make them work. You also learn how to forgive yourself when you can't, and you do the best you can. And when you can be engaged, you are engaged. And that is something that became hypercritical to me, because as someone that spent a good chunk of the middle of the week on the road, those moments when you're home on the weekends, you make the time for things that matter to you. For us, that was every night we eat dinner at the table. It was, we all do certain activities together that, you know, we found important. And everybody's got their own list of what those look like, but you have to find a way to embrace the time that you have and make the quality piece much more important than the quantity piece.
I love that. I was going to ask you if you were reflecting on anything you wish you knew early on when you started having kids and thinking about your family and traveling all over. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say you always lived and worked in different locations? I
mean, 23 years. Isn't that crazy? If I just kind of go through the list, I have been in Sacramento for the last 23 years, but I have had my offices in Minneapolis, Detroit, Atlanta, Boston, Amsterdam. So... yeah. And now my company's headquartered in Denver. So Denver has been my shortest commute. So interestingly enough, that's been the easiest.
There you go. Well, and you seem to have always make it work. And a couple of things that you mentioned, one, to have a strong partner and someone to support you. So a good support system in general is one of the most critical things. So that cannot be underestimated as far as how important that is to have in going through this. And then two, something that I'm really trying to practice and make sure I really stick to, because every time I host this podcast, I keep hearing this message, which is to be present when you're with your kids, because it flies by and in a blink of an eye there, you know, like you've got two adult children now, and I don't want to miss out on that. And now, you know, with all the technology we have, it's so easy to escape and not be present and constantly be working. And, you know, you and I are both super active in our industries and in our communities. So it would be easy to be distracted and not be present, but it's so critical for the kids to really be able to see that you're there for them, help build their confidence, but also it helps them to see for their own future what they can be as well, and that they can have both.
Yeah, that is exactly right.
All right. Well, in closing, Teresa, if I were to ask you to share the best piece of advice you've ever been given, what was it and how have you applied it to your personal and professional life?
Well, it's funny. You actually stole the exact two words I wrote down, which was be present. It is by far the most important. At TalentWave, and when I first joined, we were building out the core values. And one of the core values is totally engaged. And totally engaged for me means exactly the same thing. It means if I'm talking to you, I'm engaged with you. I'm not doing 400 other things. I'm not thinking about 500 other things. I'm really here in the moment with you, doing my best to do that. Now, way easier to say than do, but it is something that I work on all the time.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Teresa, for being here with us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's been a busy week for you with the conferences and so forth. So let's say someone listening to the podcast, if they'd like to reach you, what's your preferred method of outreach?
Preferably work email, which is tcreach@talentwave.com.
Excellent. All right, Teresa, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.